Cigarette smoking has been front and centre in the news this week. A pack of cigarettes will rise to $30 a pack in the next 4 years. Of the 546,000 daily smokers in New Zealand, if they continue, they'll be paying over $1,000 more per year for the habit. And plain packaging of cigarettes is going to happen in New Zealand following Australia's lead. So are tax levers effective in changing people's behaviour? Or are such hikes deeply unfair? Or do we need to look at less punitive tools? Associate Professor Marewa Glover from Massey University has worked on tobacco control issues for 23 years and is a recognised authority on electronic cigarettes and their use. We have Professor Tony Blakely from the Department of Public Health at Otago University, and he developed a pioneering study linking the national census with mortality data to allow monitoring and research on ethnic and socioeconomic inequalities and the contribution of smoking to mortality. And we have Dr. Eric Crampton. He's an economist and head of research at the New Zealand Initiative. Welcome all.
Good morning.
Kia ora.
Kia ora.
Tony, first to you. The increase to $30. What do we know about taxation and cigarettes? Is taxing the best way to go?
Taxing is probably the most effective way at reducing cigarette consumption. For every 1% increase in price, you probably reduce consumption by about 0.4 to 0.5%. And that reduction in consumption is split roughly 50-50 between people quitting and people reducing the number of cigarettes. That's what we've known for 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. As the price keeps on going up, we don't have reason to believe that that responsiveness, that price elasticity will change, but we are moving into new territory here with the tobacco price going particularly high.
As Associate Professor Nick Wilson says, this tax policy makes New Zealand one of the world leaders in a tobacco endgame strategy. So this is quite new indeed for the world, Tony.
Yes, we are now moving to quite high prices. So is Australia. Australia actually has higher prices if you just do an exchange rate conversion. At least that's what they're planning to have within the next 4 or 5 years.
So it does work?
Emphatically, yes.
Emphatically. Marewa, what about you? You respond to what Tony's saying there.
It has worked in the past, and I supported the tax increases that have occurred over the last 9 years on the basis that it would work. But what's happening is we're all using different statistics. So when I look at the Ministry of Health's survey data, the health survey data, and that just came out, the 2014-15 data showed no significant drop for Māori since 2006-07, and that has given me reason to pause and to question if we are indeed going on the right track here, or I think we need to have a look and review if this is actually
increasing. Yet you've been a long-time supporter of tax increases in tobacco and your research in tobacco.
Only because I was convinced, like everybody else, that it was the most powerful tool we had and it would work. I think all of us have said we need a package, a comprehensive program, and over the last 9 years we've had the taxes, we've had free cessation support, we've had mass media campaigns, and looking at the Ministry's health survey data, which actually is regular smoking, that's another big difference here, is
right,
whether people are looking at daily smoking or regular smoking. With no significant drop for Māori, Pacific, and I'm particularly concerned for Māori women because of our high rates of smoking while pregnant. That's one of my priority concerns as pregnant mums.
It's confusing for me because I've got a 2013 census. Regular smoking plunged from 45.5% in 06 to 34.7% for Māori women. From 38% to 30% for Māori men, on it goes. I'm seeing a big drop.
Daily smoking.
Regular smoking.
Can I perhaps jump in there? We have three data sources that are probably worth looking at. The health survey that Māori was spoken to, the census that you've just introduced, and also the youth surveys, which show profound decreases in youth smoking for all ethnicities. The census and the health survey, they can't both be right. At least one of them's wrong. With the census, it is supposedly of everybody in New Zealand, there will be some non-response by people not replying to the census question, some non-response to the smoking question per se. If you factor those things in, you can't make that trend go away. With the health survey, there probably are significant reductions in time, but they're nowhere near as big as what the census suggests. I agree with Mariwa to that point. However, there's quite a lot of imprecision on that health survey data. And best we can work out, and we've looked at this a lot, is there must be some changing selection into that health survey with some changing response bias over time. That's our best conclusion on it. We think the census is probably closer to the truth, although we recognise that the health survey is depicting a different pattern.
All right, so that's where the confusion for me as a person who's watching the issue comes in. What about you, Eric? Let's bring an economist into this. What do you make of the taxation? Does it work? Is education the better way, and not be so draconian about taxing a substance which will weigh heavily on those that can least afford it?
Sure. It depends what we really mean by works here. So taxes do work to reduce consumption, and they have worked to reduce consumption. I agree with Mariwa that the rate of working has been declining a bit. But even if we take the numbers at face value, for every Maori smoker who's quitting in the projections, you're getting about 16 and a half who are going to be paying another $1,000 per year for a half pack a day smoking habit, even accounting for a slight reduction in the amount that they might smoke as consequence. So can we really say that something is working and effective in reducing consumption if it's putting that kind of a burden on some of our poorest communities, especially when we have alternatives available like legalizing vaping? If you look at some of the objectives the tobacco excise has had, it's been to make smoking very expensive for kids, to reduce youth uptake. Youth uptake is well down, has declined, has continued to decline. I am not convinced that you need more than CPI adjustments to excise to be able to maintain that. Kids have kind of gone off of it. What you need to get are the hardcore smokers who have been reluctant to switch over because there haven't been legal available options to be able to make that choice to something that's healthier.
Mario, I'll come to you. So, but Tony, just back to you then. I mean, what about that? And according to health research, Nick Wilson, what do you got? For every 1,000 Māori in 2020, 13 smokers will have given up due to the excise, but many Māori will continue and will pay much more. Is it worth it?
Okay, I think there's two things that all three of us would agree on. The first one is that any tobacco control program has to be comprehensive, including lots of things, and most of us would put tobacco tax at the centre of that. The second thing we agree on is that the financial impact on those who continue to smoke is real and somehow needs to be addressed, and how that's addressed is a matter for debate. Probably there is not enough support provided through mass promotion campaigns for the quit line and providing help to those smokers. They do deserve more than what they're currently getting.
All right, Mariwa?
Yes, that's right. So the comprehensive program that we had the tax. The other thing we had was, say, free cessation, you know, subsidised nicotine replacement patches, gum lozenge, subsidised Champix and Zybenza medications. But the ministry's recently reviewed the performance of the smoking cessation, say, program of work that they were purchasing. And unfortunately, it wasn't returning value for money, so the effectiveness level wasn't enough. So I think it's a very brave step, and I applaud that they actually ended all the contracts and they've re-tendered for new smoking cessation provision. And they're currently just wrapping up who those new providers will be. So not only did we have the taxes, we actually had a sub-effective, if I could say, program of cessation support. I really think, as Eric mentioned, that nicotine vaping, this presents a brand new opportunity. There are some unknowns in terms of the modelling that Tony and his team do. We don't know what effect it will have into that mix, but all signals, looking at the UK, looking at the US, and the drop in prevalence in those countries, rapid, far more rapid than what we've experienced here.
I want to talk a bit more about vaping later on, because it's very interesting, and you know a lot about the vaping side of things. I just want to stay on the tax for a bit, because, you know, this is a bit of a bugbear. And to quote Nick Wilson, tobacco tax is the single most effective tool used by governments to prevent tobacco smoking uptake and reduce rates.
I think that what is happening for Māori women, so I really had to think what's going on here, because some of my research with Māori and Pacific lower socioeconomic people showed that they are indeed being triggered by the tax increases to quit. So yes, it does incentivise quitting. In fact, in South Auckland, where we did our survey, we found a lot of quitting, so more than others. The problem then is that they're not managing to stay quit. One of the other problems with our analysis is that we're just looking at tobacco, reducing smoking, and the effect of tobacco tax in isolation. So there are many other drivers of smoking, and financial stress is one of those, other sorts of stress, other sorts of comorbidity, having other conditions they have to deal with, living in disadvantaged communities, the homelessness, the cost of rents, the constant, you know, barrage of say Māori bashing that we get in the media, that Māori women get, that Tariana used to talk about, violence, you know, all of these other issues, increasing the stress, increasing the psychological trauma, really, that a lot of Māori women are experiencing on a day-to-day basis, driving them to need to do something to relieve that issue. Smoking is probably the cheapest stress relief.
Does that make sense to you, Tony?
Yeah, I accept what Marie was saying about the stress levels. I think it's about that word comprehensive again. I think ongoing tobacco tax increases need to be part of the package going forward. They are the most evidence-based part. But as Maria said, the level and quality of the support for smokers needs to be upped. Improved access to the quitting mechanisms, and we'll talk about vaping in a sec.
So talking about cigarette smoking, a panel on taxes and other aspects of cigarette smoking, your thoughts, Sunday at rnz.co.nz. We'll put it up on Twitter right now, at rnzsunday. Very big issue, this. A lot of people interested. Eric, in terms of taxation, because a lot of people have said to me, OK, it's just deeply unfair. You're doing these big price hikes with cigarettes. You know what? A pack-a-day smoker, that's $10,900 a year, nearly $11,000 a year. Extraordinary. You know, so what about alcohol? Why don't we see the same sort of tax signals by the government toward alcohol?
Oh, well, we do have fairly substantial excise levies on alcohol.
Not to the same extent.
Oh, certainly not to the same extent. I think it's largely because smokers are now a pretty marginalized group that everybody's pretty comfortable on beating up on through excise, and drinking is a little bit more prevalent.
Is that the reason?
I think that's one of the main political reasons for it. If you look in terms of overall health costs, when I looked at the numbers a couple of years ago, alcohol excise is ballpark equivalent to the social costs of alcohol, and there are better measures for dealing with the real externalities of drunk people going out and doing violent things, like the HOPE program in Hawaii and 24/7 in South Dakota, where they start targeting people who have demonstrated that they cannot have a healthy relationship with alcohol a little bit more directly, rather than just hiking excise. As I like to put it on that one, we don't go after boy racers through petrol excise. It'd be a little bit ridiculous to do that, and we're in a bit of a similar situation with alcohol. When it comes to tobacco, the usual justification is the cost of the public health system. I know that Tony's done some work on this as well. It's tough to make the case that you need continued excise hikes justified by the cost to the public health system two grounds. First off, the overall tax take is huge relative to the costs that smokers are imposing, and that's even before you start accounting for that they end up not collecting superannuation because they unfortunately die more quickly. And there are other mechanisms that we could use to curb some of the health costs, like vaping.
Could it also be perhaps too, in the difference between alcohol and cigarettes, Marewa, to quote the Smoke-Free Coalition, so this is their words, not mine, tobacco is the only consumer product that kills half its users when used as the manufacturer intends.
That has been the case. In fact, it's possibly an underestimate as more health effects come to light, you know, and associations are found between smoking and, you know, there's a further...
So that might be underestimated.
It could be underestimated.
It almost certainly is, actually. As people get healthier, otherwise tobacco kills more and more, a greater percentage of the people who smoke, in this recent Australian research. Back to you, Mario.
That's incredible. So can I ask you then, around the panel, to that end, is there actually any place in society for cigarette smoking?
No.
Tony, no. Marewa?
I think there's always going to be, depending, the environment has totally changed with the introduction of this new technology, the e-cigarettes, and other new nicotine products, so safer, reduced.
But cigarettes?
Yep. Well, that changes the figures. That figure there, that half will, you know, will suffer from a smoking-related illness if used as intended. That's not going to stand up going into the future, because that's not how people are going to use into the future. With a wider range of nicotine products, we won't have people using the cigarette the same way.
Will it still have the 4,000 chemicals in it?
Apparently there's like 6 now, or 7,000, you know. But we used to say the earlier you start smoking, the longer you smoke, the greater the damage, the earlier you'll die. But that whole model really will shift now, because people may not continue to smoke like they used to. There's now alternatives, and what we see is people will switch to those alternatives.
So the key issue is here, I think everybody agrees that we want to get tobacco smoking out of New Zealand, and it's the pathway we take. Do we just keep reducing that consumption, or do we try and provide substitutes that people swap to that contain nicotine? That is the big debate.
Eric?
I'll disagree a little bit. There was a good case for a lot of anti-smoking measures when people were severely misinformed about the actual health risks of tobacco. There was a very good case at that point for lots of government information campaigns and backing that up with excise at the time. It's hard to make the case now that people are unaware of the harms from smoking.
But the vast majority of smokers want to quit.
And how we would address that is by legalizing safer alternatives, right? So if we're in a spot where we've legalized vaping and the people who want to continue getting nicotine that way have flipped over to vaping, but some people who are fully aware of the risks and really prefer cigarettes instead and are paying excise at least sufficient to cover their costs to the health system, I don't think that I can stomp on those choices.
We don't run the same argument for people who like living in a house that happens to have asbestos roofing on it and they quite like it. We actually, as a society, make a decision that we're going to get rid of asbestos out of society.
Yeah, but we don't ban mountain climbing. We don't ban lots of other risky things that people choose to do that may have implicit cost to the health system. We know that the ACC costs of rugby are very high and that rugby clubs don't have to pay for that. They're externalizing some of those costs, but we admit that in a free society, people should be allowed to make choices that have risks.
But first, I'm hearing is there any place in society for cigarette smoking? Eric says yes. Marewa.
Yes, I'm going to say that the harm from smoking is based on the intensity of exposure over time. That is going to change. Mm-hmm. So with other alternatives available that people will switch in and out of, it won't be the same thing that the longer you smoke. It will still be the longer you smoke, the more you smoke, the greater the harm. But a whole lot of people are not going to smoke too long or as long, and at that intensity, we're going to see a reduction in that harm. It's relative to how much you smoke and how long you smoke. We're going to see that shift.
Do you want to see a smoke-free Aotearoa by 2025?
I don't believe that we'll ever have that. We've always thought the goal was that we would get to below 5%. Now, I'm not sure whether that's daily or regular smoking, because we're sort of using two different measures there. But I count, if someone is regularly smoking, even non-daily, then they're still smoking, they're still a smoker. We always expected there would be a small percentage of the population who would never be able to quit and never wants to quit, particularly among mental health consumers. Some people with schizophrenia is a particular disorder that's, you know, highly mm-hmm. associated with smoking. And there's some other, you know, it's just some people aren't going to want to quit. And some won't be able to, unless you go to prison, unless it's totally taken out of the environment.
I'm a panel on smoking. Your thoughts at RNZ Sunday. That's the Twitter. I'm with Professor Tony Blakely. He's from the Department of Public Health at Otago University. Associate Professor Marewa Glover from Massey University, works on tobacco control. And Eric Crampton, economist at the New Zealand Initiative. Tony, here's one thing that I've got to ask. And we did a TV show on this, and, you know, it's set in a pub, right? So the big conversation was actually this very, very unfair to have a blight on cigarette smoking when alcohol does far more damage to society. New Zealand society, you've got drinking, drink driving, alcohol-related deaths. We know that tobacco kills, 5,000 people every year. So what are the facts around that? What's more dangerous in society, if you can compare, alcohol or tobacco?
These are good questions. They're quite tough to answer as well. I'm going to bring a beastie in here as well to round it out to the three sins.
Okay, good, yes.
All right. With tobacco prevalence having gone down, we've reached a point where probably the obesity burden now exceeds tobacco.
But really?
It's just happened recently. As best we can tell, you've got to use assumptions in this type of modelling. However, we know how to get rid of the tobacco out of New Zealand. It's actually something that's easier to act on in policy. It's not that we shouldn't be doing things in the obesity space, but actually you can probably be more effective in the tobacco space. As far as alcohol, that's really tricky because of evidence that may no longer be accepted about some beneficial effect for modest consumption on coronary heart disease. And there's increasing research and expert opinion that actually that might have been an error in previous research. That's point one. Point two is as cardiovascular disease plummets in rates, it means that any benefit through that is going to be less apparent as the harm still remains for young people who lose lots of years of life through injury, road traffic crash, etc. I'm sorry, I can't tell you exactly how much harm the alcohol does.
That's very revealing. So obesity, of the three lions, the obesity is actually just the number one, only recently. Mate, well, what about you? I mean, I did read a report on the alcohol commission by the Alcohol Advisory Council, this is 3 years ago, said that around 800 deaths a year were attributable to drinking. So that's their report, New Zealand evidence. Not quite sure how reliable that is, but what do you think when it comes to this comparison?
I think the issue for me is from a Māori perspective, we need to not look at these things in isolation. So with alcohol, there are social costs. There are, there are costs to society. It impacts on other people. So you've got your economic cost and you've got your social cost, and then there's the actual numbers that die. Smoking has been sort of more clear cut in that we're particularly looking at it because of the numbers that die, their health effects. So it's very difficult to go which is worse. I'm pretty sure smoking has been the worst. Far more people die from smoking, and secondhand smoking are impacted disease-wise than alcohol. But the social costs of smoking were not so great. Smokers don't go and vomit on you or crash into you. So it's two different kinds of what cost is worse.
I think Maria makes really good points there. But the alcohol does affect younger people, so there's more years of life lost there from injury. Sorry, Maria, I just wanted to add that.
More years of life lost, that's right. So it depends what you value. What do we value more? The obesity issue, and this is one of the reasons why I'm particularly concerned about this very high crushing tax on particularly Māori and Pacific. So obesity among Māori and Pacific is disproportionately high. There's a wide disparity between Māori and Pacific and European Pākehā on obesity. And we have all of the other factors of lower socioeconomic. The tobacco tax, we want people to make healthier choices. So there's two things, like healthier choice, as in we know that Māori families who smoke are already struggling, they say, to put food on the table because they try and find the money somewhere. They may reduce consumption, but they're still spending a lot on tobacco. So food from their kids' mouths, what everybody says, that's what goes. Then on top of that, we've got this other issue now, which is causing ill health and death, early premature death, obesity. So we have another new program come in of campaigning and health education. We want you to make healthier choices. Well, that takes money. If they're struggling to put food on the table, it's going to be difficult for them to put healthier food on the table.
Hey, before I move to Eric, I want to get something clear, Marewa, that you said in the media, or maybe it was amplified by the media, but I'm not quite sure. You said that these tax hikes were a racist policy. Did you really mean that?
What I was trying to get across was that it has a differential impact by ethnicity because of the differential prevalence by ethnicity. So Māori women smoking, using the health survey data, 42% of Māori women smoke versus 13% of Pākehā women. And if you look at Asian women, their smoking rate's 2%. So we have huge differences. So if you impose a policy that's across the board, but it's not going to be equally felt by everybody. We have a wide, you know, differential, and it's going to impact far more on Māori and Pacific smokers.
Eric, I just want to talk a bit about plain packaging, because Australia was a world first in this, and Australia won an international legal battle with Philip Morris over plain packaging. New Zealand waited to see the outcome, and now it will be introduced here. What are your thoughts on plain packaging?
Sure.
It's an historic moment for, you know, in terms of the tobacco control. Will it work?
Sure. I'll jump to that as soon as I get to something that Tony had gotten onto on the mortality effects of drinking. Tony was rightly alluding to that. Some of the earlier studies on the effects of alcohol on all-source mortality were perhaps contaminated by that some former drinkers were counted as not drinking at all, and so their health costs were counted as being a cost of being a teetotaler, and that was wrong. And that was raised around 2005, but there are a lot of studies that were done since then that very carefully control for whether there are any former drinkers in the mix, or restricting things to people who have no former drinkers. Rim and Moats 2007, for example, DiCastelnuovo's meta study. There's been plenty of work that has since thoroughly addressed the issue of former drinkers being mixed in, and the best estimates now are that light drinking on the order of about a unit per day, a little bit less than that for women, a little bit more than that for men, is associated with about an 18% reduction in your risk of all-source mortality.
Right.
So it's...
You can't say that for having a cigarette a day, can you?
You cannot say that for having a cigarette a day. So I think it's a bit of a red herring to say that.
No. If that benefit exists under coronary heart disease or cardiovascular disease, as cardiovascular disease rates plummet in our society, they're going down in mortality rates by 4% per year. The equilibrium or the net effect into the future, even if there is a modest cardiovascular benefit from modest alcohol consumption, will change as the world changes, as diabetes kills more people, as we move to more dementia, as we move to other disease processes. This is a constantly changing field.
We've not seen that in the data yet, and in the nurse's health study, we also see that moderate consumption of alcohol in through middle age predicts successful aging. So I guess maybe in time your hypothesis will bear out, but for now it's still reducing mortality. When we get to plain packaging, it's kind of neat when we look at some of the Australian data. There are some predictions that were made that seemed pretty sensible from my perspective by some tobacco control researchers in Australia, suggesting that moving to plain packaging, the main effect of that would be to reduce brand loyalty, because you stop seeing some of the product affiliation that way.
That's the idea.
And one consequence of reducing brand affiliation is that people start downshifting in brands. So if it made you feel good about yourself to be a Marlboro person or a Camel person or whatever, once that brand affiliation goes away, you can shift to smoking that's at a lower price point. So shifting from a pack of cigarettes that's $25 in New Zealand to one that's $18.80, I think $18.80 is about the cheapest you can get a pack of 24 right now. To the extent that people then do that because of plain packaging, it lets cigarettes be more affordable. So the warning that they put in then was that if you're going to put in plain packaging, you have to combine it with a pretty substantial price increase if you don't want to undo some of the good that you might be doing, if you think that's a good thing. And the data that we'd seen afterwards on monthly consumption showed a bit of an increase after plain packaging, then a sharp reduction after the tax hikes that came in after that. So the policy is somewhat self-defeating on that ground, and you also start worrying in the combination of plain packaging and exceptionally high excise rates that you start having more problems with smuggling, and we're starting to see some evidence of that out of the Australian Customs
Just
Authority.
Just a brief response on plain packaging, Marewa and Tony, before we get into vaping. Tony?
Denormalisation is probably the major effect through plain packaging and having labels
plastered
all over it, and that's part of a whole societal change. It's got to be supported.
Marewa, if you're used to your Dunhill Reds and all of a sudden you don't see that very fashionable gold and red or, you know, whatever brand, does it work when you've got an olive poo colour?
I think it's mainly aimed at reducing the attractiveness for young people. Rather, you know, most of the smokers I've talked all, you know, for the last 20 years, that this is not going to stop them smoking. The thing that I do want to introduce here is, the good thing about it is an attack on the industry. The other thing that everybody should be aware of is that the tobacco industry does not have to pass on this increase. So even though the government has said prices need to go up by this, the companies could absorb it, but of course they're not going to, are they?
Yeah. Hey, finally, I want to talk about vaping because I'm a bit confused about the issues. When I read it in the media and when I... What is it? Is it good for you? It's very mixed signals. Maire Awe, you're a recognised expert on the issue of electronic cigarettes. Is it confusing?
It's not confusing, but there is a lot of misinformation and lies, you know, that are circulating, and that's deliberate to put people
deliberate?
Off. Yes. There are many, many people in tobacco control and in public health worldwide that do not like this. They see it as a threat on a number of grounds to, say, a smoke-free New Zealand or to denormalisation. They just personally don't like it. And so there's a lot of research. There's some kind of quite dodgy research that's going on where... Yeah, they just are deliberately creating negative results. And then the media, tends to or has sensationalised some of that negative stuff. Something out of Japan in the last few days saying it's like, you know, 10 times worse than smoking cigarettes.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah, no, the reports to look at are the Public Health England report, which did a full review. And in England, they're like, we need to be switching all of our smokers over to vaping. And then that was followed by the Royal College of Physicians, UK, also, you know, concluding, yep, they're pretty much 95% safer than smoking.
Is that something, Tony, we could look at, along with these tax hikes, maybe, and some sort of nationwide initiative to say, you know, rolling out of ads saying, why not switch to vaping?
Absolutely, we should be looking at it. But let's actually just walk through the logic here. If your end goal is to get rid of tobacco smoking, we want mechanisms to do that. E-cigarettes or vaping is one possibility. What are the benefits? It increases people who quit. Quit rates go up by perhaps 50% if you're vaping as well at the same time, so that's good. The downsides are that for those people who vape, there might be a small, I agree with Moriwa, maybe 5%, maybe even less of the damage of tobacco is manifest through vaping because you're heating stuff and you're still getting some carcinogens coming in there. The other one that is very uncertain, and we're trying some modelling on the moment, and it really, you know, it's pretty important, is if you renormalise tobacco smoking by having vaping there and you slow the reduction in uptake, the initiation by youth, if you slow that down because you change the cultural norms, you can actually derail the goal of, say, getting to a tobacco-free New Zealand. I'm on the fence on this. This is a clearly an important research question to be addressing, is vaping good or not? But, you know, there are pros and cons in here, and we need to work our way through them.
You're shaking your head there. Do you want a quick response before you go, or we're going to leave it at that?
I have done some research with children on their perception of smoking versus e-cigarettes. And children are not that dumb. They can tell the difference. So vaping does not renormalise smoking. They are different behaviours. It's a new phenomenon. And people, and even children, are not confusing this.
Maybe there's a case for more research, but the default really should matter here. If we don't know what the long-term mess might be, but we know that it's less than smoking, why the hell aren't we legalizing it now? How can we draw a conclusion that the government is not just trying to suck more money out of poor communities if they're ramping up tobacco taxes this much while not making it easy and legal to access a far safer alternative?
All right, we're going to get a huge response from this. I really appreciate all of your time. What a fascinating and complex issue there. Finally, before you go, Tony, Erica, Marewa, have any of you been former smokers?
Yes. I started when I was 13. Māori, after all, you know, I mean. And I got sick in my sort of mid-20s, and so it was easy for me to believe the messages that smoking would kill me, and I was only ever a light smoker anyway, so I was able to quit. But Yeah, my sister, she still smokes. Well, I did get her onto vaping for 5 months, but people gave her such a hard time and were so mean to her about it that, you know, and the stresses of, you know, being a Māori woman in this society just drove her back to smoking.
Tony and Eric, have you been smokers?
While I was in grad school, I enjoyed a cigar every now and then, but that's ridiculously expensive here. I don't think one cigar a month would do me any kind of harm at all.
No.
And I wouldn't mind getting back to that sometime.
All right. It's certainly looking forward to your responses. Professor Tony Blakely, Associate Professor Mario Waglava, and Dr. Eric Crampton, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.